Tonight's book, not a business book, it's much better than that. It's about the creation of a non-profit organization that has helped shape rural child development in South Africa for the past four decades. Now, I've known Jane Evans most of my life. She arrived on a farm in the Free State, having left the Rand Daily Mail, where she was the women's editor. And then she needed a mission. She needed a plan. She's written a book called A Path Unexpected. And it's all about Ntataise, which is a non-profit organization, which you founded, was it, you arrived in Viljoenskroon. Must have been a huge culture shock, Jane, in 1978. And you needed a mission, I think, after working in the cut and thrust of the Rand Daily Mail and the madness of media in the apartheid era. You needed a mission.
I needed a mission. Hello, Bruce. It's lovely to be on air with you. I needed a mission, but the mission somehow came to me and found me before I was sort of too actively looking for it. And it probably all started with June 76 and the realization of what there was and wasn't in terms of education in our part of the world.
And early childhood development was not a focus of apartheid South Africa. I mean, the Nats did fund farm schools, and it was elementary education, and kids used to walk along gravel roads for 4 or 5 kilometers to get to their nearest farm school. Early childhood development wasn't a thing. I didn't go to nursery school, and I think it shows, but I had a mum who taught me, who taught me what I needed to know that I would have learned at nursery school. But it was a case of early childhood development was a gap that you spotted. What influenced you to realize and understand that early childhood development was severely lacking in the preschool sector?
You know, when I worked on the Rand Daily Mail, I did interviews with some fabulous women in Johannesburg, Dawn Haggy and Denise Parkinson, who worked with fantastic women in Soweto to try and make early learning a reality. I mean, I'm talking about the early 1970s, and with me it was 1976. And when the day on the 17th of June, when my husband and I went down to the farm primary school, I left the two men to talk, the headmaster and Anthony, and I wandered off and saw lots and lots of little children just playing in the sand, pushing wire cars around. And I suppose something must have clicked, and I must have thought back to my first visit to the Soweto preschools when I was 17. And I just said to Anthony on the way home, I asked the headmaster if there was any such thing as a nursery school for farm workers' children. And he said, no, absolutely not. He hadn't heard of anything of the sort, certainly not in our area, not in our province. And I just said to Anthony on the way home, if the government isn't going to do it, then we're going to do it. And he said to me with an element of surprise, you know, what do you know about nursery schools? And I said, well, I don't, but I know people who do. And that's really where we left off from.
But that's the point, and I think it's the lesson. I mean, the thing that comes through most strongly in the book is you really don't have a clue. You haven't an idea what you're doing, but you go and you do it anyway, and you're willing to go trial and error and to really build something that fundamentally changes the lives of probably by now millions of young people in South Africa. I mean, that is the extent and the reach of Ntataise to this day. Those early days, I mean, did you ever sort of want to chuck in the towel if you looked at it and it just seemed hopeless as you made mistakes as you went along?
It never occurred to me. You know, I was extremely fortunate. There were the most wonderful women on the farm, farm workers' wives, young women, a few teachers, and we worked together from the word go. You know, I had very wise advice from my husband, Anthony, who, you know, he said, look, it might be your bright idea, but you'd better find out if the parents of the children actually want such a thing. And really, from that moment, I started asking. I didn't ever do anything without consulting. And when I did, I usually got myself into trouble. And I built up a really strong relationship with women on the farm, women in the township, women, just generally, there were women in those days. And I was looking at the title of your book, And we found ourselves looking at the upside of dawn in our time. So I never worked alone. And it was trial and error from both our sides.
Yet, I mean, when you opened on the farm, Hunter's Flay, which is the family farm, the Evans family farm, you know, on the first day you had no idea if the kids would turn up. You had consulted, you'd had the discussions. There was some apprehension. And it was a bit touch and go, it seemed, at some points.
There was lots of apprehension. Nobody was particularly convinced about children learning at that age. They only learned, parents felt, when they grew up. But food was going to be served. And it was obvious that the greatest need round about was food. It wasn't early learning. So that was fine. If we managed to get children there, and we were obviously going to feed them, maybe two needs would be met at the same time.
And as we know now, and I'm sure you probably knew then and certainly approved it back then, how important nutrition is in brain development, for goodness sake. I mean, it's just, you know, so many kids in South Africa go to bed hungry, and as a result, their little brains don't develop, and they don't, you know, end up having the cognitive ability that they should have by the time they get into the schooling system.
Yeah, Bruce, I think it's absolutely tragic, and I think this is one of the things of COVID. It is so many of the nursery schools, I won't talk about the others, but haven't been functioning, and parents have lost their jobs, they haven't been able to pay the fees, and kids have been hungry. So it's been an incredible effort on the part of a lot of the Nsata-Yiso staff and the other network members we work with, who've made every single effort they can to find food and to join in donations and to sort of help over the really tough months that we've had behind us.
When I look at Nsata-Yiso and I look at the extraordinary spread, it started slowly. Hunter's Flay was the sort of proving ground. You made mistakes, but you got global interest. You got big funders. You got family offices. You got the British ambassador. You got so many people coming to see what you were doing. Jonathan Janssen was telling me the other day that, you know, he arrived from the United States after teaching there, and he just found these two people, he said, doing God's work. That's quote unquote, and was just astounded by what you did. And gradually you started getting inquiries from across the country, and this network spread. And when I last checked, there was something like there were 40 operations across the country. It's an extraordinary spread of preschool education.
We've got about 22 organizations, but they reach a lot of preschools. They've trained a lot of women. And it's, we started small, and we had to learn along the way as we got more and more requests. We, you know, accepted with alacrity, but having accepted, you then had to work out how you were going to assist people.
Yeah.
And, we just did and developed a model, and when we found we couldn't manage it ourselves, we being the Viljoenskroon-based organization, one just adapted the other organizations. And in fact, it was Jonathan Janssen and a colleague of his who came to visit us from USAID, which had been giving us quite a lot of money, and a woman called Jennifer Bisgard, and they said to us the next morning before they left, I was terrified they were going to say, look, we funded you and that's it. They said, is there anything else you need funding for? And I was able to say, we've got 8 organizations in different provinces. They want to become independent. It's becoming incredibly difficult to manage things in the far reaches of Venda from here, from the Free State. And if you could make funds available to let us encourage and work with those organizations to become independent, form their own trusts, raise their own money, it would be fantastic. So that's what happened in the mid-80s. And, so today there are 22 organizations doing similar work to us and using our training. And we work as a very strong group. We're one of the strongest networks, I think, of our sort in the country. It brings us all tremendous joy and support to know that we've all got each other if we need assistance.
I wonder what you see as your biggest victory over the last, I mean, I don't keep wanting to emphasize 40 years, but it has been 40 years. What the biggest victory is it early childhood development, which is enormous? Is it the empowerment of women in a very, very real sense, and the dignity brought, and drawing people's innate ability? You were taking uneducated people and saying to them, here's an opportunity, and these women grabbing with both hands, one because it was something valuable to do, but also just this sense of purpose and pride, which comes through in the book as almost a, at least a parallel success story.
Bruce, that's been my greatest, if anyone says to me what has given me the greatest, joy is not the right word, but that for me has been the biggest thing, is we set out to provide nursery schools for children, but we turned into an incredible women's empowerment organization. And as you say, women who always felt they couldn't suddenly became women who could. And they're women who've achieved fantastic positions in their own communities, in the broader community, some in government, some have gone on to be teachers to get university qualifications. So if there's one thing that gives me incredible, I'm incredibly pleased I've been able to be part of it, was helping and being part of the empowerment of so many women from so many different backgrounds.
You know, Jane, I grew up listening to stories about Jane Evans and Ntata Ise and seeing the work that you did. And I'm ashamed to say I had no idea just how big it was. It's an extraordinary story, Jane, and I'm so glad that you took the time to write it down, and your children forced you to write it down, because I think that there's so many lessons beyond the personal memoir that it is. And I'm very grateful for you to make time with us this evening. Jane Evans, A Path Unexpected. It's a story about Ntata Ise. It is a wonderful organization that has reached hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of young people, but also the enormous empowerment of rural women through this process is nothing short of extraordinary. And I am completely and utterly in awe of what Jane has achieved over that time. And the book is about a sense of purpose and a sense of like, well, I have no clue what I'm doing, but I know this is the right thing to do, and just doing it. And there's so much that all of us can learn from that approach. And her late husband, Anthony, was a remarkable individual as well. At one time, he was a director at Standard Bank, and he was a director of Hans Marensky Trust and many other things. But, I mean, she'd go to him with a problem, and he'd go, so what do you want to do about it? And he just basically, I mean, it was very useful support, and you know, we'd pick up the phone occasionally. But again, complete faith in her ability to make it happen. And she did. The book is called A Path Unexpected. The author is Jane Evans. It is in bookshops. It is on Takealot, and it is magnificent.